Guess what, guys?
We're not doctors.
No, we are not.
So if you're going to be making any major medical decisions, please consult your doctor.
That includes diets, surgeries, and exercise.
We love you guys.
And we want you to continue to be in our OSLP family forever.
So be careful and consult your doctor.
Yeah. You all know how much we talk about ProCare.
Yeah, we talk about it all the time.
So we are extremely excited to announce that
they are going to be sponsoring all of our episodes from here on out.
Yay!
How cool is that?
Yes, and we love ProCare so much because we truly, truly believe in their products. They work. They're easy.
We use them every day.
Every single day. I take the capsules, and it's one a day.
Yeah, and I just take the chewable, and it's one a day.
Yes. How awesome. Then... on top of that, they have calciums. And not only do they have calciums, but they're delicious calciums.
They actually taste really freaking good. They have the cinnamon rolls, actually one of my favorites.
Yes.
We have the chocolate one right in front of us, which
is who doesn't like chocolate?
Delicious because you can make s'mores with them.
Yes. And then they have dinner mint if you like mint. And they also have salted caramel, which is amazing.
It really is.
You guys all need to go get your ProCare right now.
Right freaking now.
Go.
Welcome back, OSLP family. Welcome.
As you can see, if you're watching this on YouTube, we have Dr. D back in the house.
Yes, we do.
Thank you. It's been too long, my ladies. Finally, we are back together.
I know. Oh my goodness. Our schedules have just been nuts, and you've been crazy busy. We've seen all the things that you're doing. We can't wait for what's coming.
Yeah.
And so thank you for being back on the show.
And
I can't wait. And this is going to be a hot conversation here, I think, for a lot of people. It's a very curious topic.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell everybody out there what we're going to be discussing today?
So if anybody doesn't know what they're listening to, you are listening to our Sleeve Life podcast. And this is the Dr. D Diaries, Dovek Diaries. And I'm Kelly.
This is Mel.
And we're going to talk about complications.
Yes.
It's when Dr. D came to us with this idea for this episode, I was like, hell yes, because we don't talk about it enough.
No.
We want to stay positive, right?
Yeah.
All of us want to stay positive. We don't want to think about the negative things that can happen, but it can happen. Well, and so being prepared for those complications is why I was so gung-ho about this.
Yeah, because even for me, I'm like, I want everybody to get the surgery. Get your surgery. I don't want you to be scared to get your surgery. But also, I want you as informed as possible.
Why we did this fucking podcast.
That's right. And that's why we've had Dr. D with us this past year, because we need all that information. Mm-hmm. And we're finally getting to the point of, hey, guys, there is complications. Mm-hmm. It does happen every once in a while. And who's better to get all the information from than Dr. D? So you tell us, what is kind of common complications, or how do you want to start this one?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. So I want to put it out there to everyone listening and watching that complications are overwhelmingly, exceedingly rare.
Oh,
very, very rare. They're less than typically, less than 1%. It depends on what it is. And there's a whole host of different things that could potentially happen. This is not to do a horror flick here or to scare you away. This is to tell you sometimes, unfortunately things can happen, but almost always, I'd say 99% of the time, plus, it sucks that it happened to you, but ultimately there is a great way that it can be fixed. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of different ways. So if it happens to you, or if you know somebody, maybe this episode might even point them in the right direction as to where to go.
Yeah.
So I wanted to start by explaining a little bit about the anatomy again.
Yes.
So
we love our anatomy.
I know you guys do. You guys are almost honorary surgeons at this point.
We have done 2 surgeries.
That's
true.
I need my tin blade and we'll be good to go.
And my gator.
You're going to use a 10 blade. That's a bigger knife. I'm
She's
impressed.
Like Dexter over here.
That's the only one I know.
I use an 11 blade, but most surgeons who do laparoscopy use a 15 blade.
Ooh.
So the higher goes up, the smaller the blade. So it tends to kind of a big dog. It does exist though.
Okay. Well,
I'm going to go mid range. I'm going to go 12.
You're going to do a 12.
I'm going to do a 12.
There's no 12 blade actually.
Oh, that's
What?
There's no 12 blades I know of. I'm sorry. Yes.
So, like, damn it.
Oh, I'm going to create it. I'm going to create the Kelly 12 blade.
There we go.
Gosh, you guys, forget this gig. You guys are going to need to get patents on your intellectual property you're developing over there.
There we go.
All right. So what are we looking at?
Let's start. So the first thing we're looking at, if you're watching this on YouTube, this is a gastric sleeve. And as Kelly and Mel just said, we have two different podcasts where they came into the OR virtually with me. Mm-hmm. And we did a live operation of a sleeve, and we also did a gastric bypass. So you should check back out on one of the previous Dr. Dovek diaries and look at the surgeries if you want to see more details there.
And you can go to our YouTube and our website to watch both of them.
Yes, you can. And hit subscribe and the bell.
Yes.
And what is your website again?
OurSleevedLifePodcast.com.
Yep.
There we go. All right. So head over there and check it out. But what I am showing is an image of a sleeve. Mm-hmm. So as you guys know, it's also known as the gastric sleeve, sleeve gastrectomy, vertical sleeve gastrectomy, VSG. Mm-hmm. So the basic principles of this procedure are the stomach goes from roughly the size of a football when it's full down to about the size of a garden hose.
Yeah.
So the way we do this, I put a sizing tube into the stomach so that I don't make it too big or too tight. And the other big thing here is I use a stapling device that you guys call the gaiter.
Yes, right.
And the gaiter is that big disposable instrument that will actually staple the tissue, which seals it, and then it will separate it from itself. So gastrectomy or ectomy after something means it's removed. So the lighter pink stomach over here to the right, or about 80% of the stomach, if you're not looking, is ultimately removed so that you're left with, again, 15 to 20%. All right. So that's the procedure. Really high level overview. There's a lot of little nuances about it. Again, check things out if you want to see more details. But where can things go wrong with this? So the big thing is, one of the things a lot of people worry about is this staple line.
Yes.
Is the staple line along here? So the staple line, again, you want it to be airtight. I'm going to stop sharing my screen for a second. So you want that to be airtight there along it, meaning if you were to have something called a leak, a leak would mean that the GI tract or gastrointestinal tract is everything from your mouth to your anus.
Right.
And everything in between. We've talked about this before. Now, the, like I said, you guys are learning your stuff here. So with the stomach or any part of the GI tract, everything that's inside of it, food and such, that's dirty. It ultimately becomes stool and it ultimately leaves your body. Now, the problem is if something that's dirty gets into that sterile abdominal cavity, the body doesn't like that.
Right.
Because so when it, if it leaks out and the hole's small or if it's big, it can be a different kind of a scenario.
Okay.
So what can happen if you have a leak after a sleeve? So it can be very annoying. It can take a long time to heal because the problem is with the sleeve, it's a pressurized system. So in other words, at the end of your stomach, you have the pylorus and that pylorus closes after you swallow. So that's closed. Sometimes it can create pressure for things to go back up, which is why some patients get acid reflux or regurgitation afterwards, because it's like pushing it with that being closed and it's narrow and there's not a lot of space for things to sit there. It can push it up through the hiatus of the diaphragm. In other words, give you acid reflux. Now, if you have a little hole and that hole's at the top of the sleeve there, sometimes that keeps putting pressure on it. So it makes it harder sometimes for it to heal.
Okay.
So the thing is with the hole, you got to close the hole. You've got to close the hole. So there's two different ways that you can close it. Number one, you could potentially try to get in there surgically, wash out the abdomen, wash out all the gunk and the murk and the dirty stuff that's kind of gone into that sterile clean area.
Okay.
You clean it out, you can drain it.
Okay.
And you can try to sew it. The problem is the tissues, it sounds so simplistic. All right, I'll find a little hole. There it is. Sew it up, patch it up, and you're done. The problem is it doesn't work like that sometimes. And it's very difficult for surgical.
Okay.
Now, there's something called endoscopy, which is, maybe you guys have had one, mm-hmm. where you go down with a camera or a scope. Mm-hmm. And with that scope, there's actually some pretty slick techniques that endoscopically, so it's a lot less invasive. It's not making incisions on your abdomen with any blades or mm-hmm. getting in there and you know, doing this. It's not a surgery. It's a procedure where you are still asleep, but they go down and they can either put something called a stent, which is sort of like an inner thing, which keeps it sealed around there. It's temporary. So once it heals, you'll pull the stent and it's done. Oh. You can attempt to endoscopically clip it, or you can try to endoscopically go down, identify the hole, and sew it.
Okay.
So there's surgical ways of fixing it and endoscopic ways of fixing it as well.
I would love to see that. Like happen.
Yeah, that seems interesting.
I'm like, what?
I'm sure the patient would be like, I'm not volunteering for a leak, but
right.
But they do happen sometimes. Mm-hmm. Have you guys ever known a patient who's had a leak in any of your things, or have you heard of it?
What's your knowledge? Followers that we've mm-hmm. talked with that had a leak, and it was a long process for her, and it was several surgeries, and it was a whole deal.
Yeah, it was a big process.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
So,
yeah, I mean, that's the toughest thing. It's about getting the leak to the hole to close. Problem is, you don't want to be eating and drinking during that time, mm-hmm. which is the hardest thing for the patient from a quality of life standpoint, mm-hmm. because you have to just give it time, let it heal. So you can do something called it's called TPN, which means it's like nutrition with a bag through your vein.
Okay.
You could also, they could also temporarily put a feeding tube in the intestine so that you can get your nutrition that way.
Mm. How long does it take to heal?
The main thing is it can take several weeks to months for it to heal.
Okay.
Okay.
Like I said, it is very rare. So if you're watching, they're like, oh my gosh, I don't want to leak. But there's all these techniques to fix it and that sort of thing. And hopefully, the patient that you know of mm-hmm. that had it, hopefully now after that whole mm-hmm. ordeal is just fine, has mm-hmm. lost weight.
Yeah,
hopefully it's a distant memory that was like a blip on the radar.
Yeah. I believe that she's doing great. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I've seen some posts. Yeah. She's good. She's good.
Okay.
Yeah. So just know if you have a leak, it can be fixed. It's just a process.
And it's just one of those annoying complications that can happen.
With the leak. So when I was going through the process, I was under the impression like it would be because, you know, like your stomach has acid. So it's like when you say like it gets dirty with the leak, is that also like your acid getting on
your stomach acid?
Getting onto your stuff.
So, I mean, that's the problem. Like, so let's say, for example, the patient ends up having an endoscopically placed stent.
Okay.
The biggest issue with a stent, for example, in this whole process is mm-hmm. that it stents open or it opens. It's the same sort of stent that if you had a blockage in a heart artery, would stent it open because it's narrowed and you're going to stent mm-hmm. it. This one is like a covered stent, like a covered bridge. I always think about where it's like covering that area. The problem is it stents, it can open things. And so a lot of times where leaks occur is the very tip top. Mm-hmm. So when you put the stent, some of it's still in the esophagus, some of it's in the stomach. So when you stent or open that area, it keeps the lower esophageal sphincter, which is supposed to close to prevent the reflux from going back up.
Okay.
If that's stenting it open, sometimes the problem is you get some really debilitating reflux while that stent is in.
Oh.
I mean, it's miserable to have the stent. So they're trying to get away from stents. Sometimes it's the only way to let it heal. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to go more with clips and sewing because you could be like, I'm out of here same day. And it actually like worked.
Wow. Nice.
So yeah, you can get reflux from that. But yeah, I mean, just the whole part of the sleeve putting pressure and going back up and having mm-hmm. the acid reflux, again, that can make it very difficult to heal. And sometimes because of the pressure, sometimes we have to convert patients with a leak to a gastric bypass mm-hmm. to depressurize it so that it won't quit. Like, basically you want that hole to close. So you don't want to keep like putting things that keep driving it open. So you don't want food to come down. You don't want food to go back up. You don't want the reflux, the acid, all those things you're describing. You just want things to drain on through as well.
Just let the gravity take its course.
Yeah.
Let the gravity take its course.
Okay.
Exactly.
All right. Well then with that, with cleaning, have you ever had to do one? Have you ever had to go in and help or fix anything?
Yes. I have had a sleeve leak before. And I've only had two in my career, and I've done about 4,000 surgeries.
Yeah.
Pretty good odds.
It's one of those, it's good odds, but my gosh, it is it's tough because, I mean, just putting myself out there as an honest surgeon to say, you know, I'm so sorry that this happened to you. Well, all I can tell you is I will give you my word that I'm going to do everything in my power to make it better. And ultimately, it will heal. It will get better. It's prolonged. You're not eating. You might have reflux. There might be some issues or morbidities just from even the procedure to try to fix it. But ultimately, it'll be okay. So if you're out there and you're struggling, it can get better.
It can get better. Yes. So why do leaks happen? So how do they happen?
Such a good question. Mm-hmm. And that is something at all of our society meetings as surgeons, when we work with industry, our industry partners are the medical device companies, the ones that make the staplers. I mean, you should see all of the engineering that goes into these things, the testing that they do and the measuring of the tissue thickness, the burst strengths and there's so much physics and things like that. It's like almost overwhelming on what goes into it, but it can either be just a staple line misfiring, which would be very, very unusual because you would be able to tell that during the case, you'd be able to see that like that's open. So it could be something like a staple line issue, which is very rare. Or typically, I think what happens is the patient might bleed and the external compression from the bleed, I think sometimes puts pressure on it. So it's like, did it bleed and then leak or did it leak and then bleed? So that my one patient that I had that had a leak, she presented with, it's called hematemesis, which is when she was vomiting blood. And it's because she had bled intra-abdominally and then it was going back into her GI tract and then coming up.
Oh, poor girl.
So,
God.
I know. She's
so
okay.
Painful.
She's doing fabulous today.
I'm sure.
It is a poor girl though. It's very, very hard. The whole thing is just very hard. And I can tell you is equally as hard on all surgeons out there. If you guys are a surgeon listening, watching, that's what you get paid to do. It's not in the fun, easy surgeries. It's in the complications and the worrying and the sleepless nights and the, let me try this. Let me do this. You're like right there with them until that thing heals and they're on eating and drinking and moving on with their life. It's horrible. I hate that part of my job. If I could erase that, this is the perfect job. But that part of it is something that comes with the territory if you're in business long enough, I think.
Totally.
Yeah. And what kind of procedure have you done? Like what was it? Was it the stent or was it the sewing or?
So ultimately it was fixed endoscopically, but I went in and I tried to wash it out, drain it, try to close it. Ultimately it didn't work. And because the tissue is very friable, very angry, very inflamed. And so it's like trying to sew tissue paper that's like kind of ripping and tearing and just angry.
Yeah.
It's not like your healthy tissue. If I go in on you right now and your intestines are so beautiful and great, they're not angry, mad, just sick. The body is amazing in that there's a fatty apron that covers everyone's intestines and it's called the omentum. You guys saw that, all that, the adipose, so that yellow tissue in there. And what that's like the body's defense mechanism, like the abdomen's like Band-Aid, if you will. So when there's a leak, what the body will do is it will actually like somehow the fat will go there. It'll get plastered to it.
Oh,
the body's own fat will try to seal and plaster the leak. So sometimes when you get in there, it's so many days have passed or if like it's a kind of a delay in diagnosis, they're not that sick. Like, there's a little bit of, it's called free air because the air that you swallow, which should ultimately passes gas. Sometimes the air will get into the abdomen. If you see free air in the abdomen, that means there's a hole somewhere. Okay. There should never be free air in the abdomen. Okay. And so sometimes the body will kind of wall it off and like focally, like kind of like seal it in that position. And when you get in there and you try to pull off the Band-Aid, it's like as hard as a rock. So you can't even, like if you were to rip it off, you could rip a huge hole into it. So you can't, you have to be so like Goldilocks. So perfect with the pressure, but also not so rough that you make matters way worse. Because if it's up high, you could really mess them up.
So is the doing it escapula? Why can I not talk? I can't say that word. Doing it where you go down through the throat is a better option because if the body is doing that response of putting that Band-Aid on it, you don't have to fight with it. If you do it endoscopically, That's my own made up word. That's my own made up word.
No, I think it's perfect. So yeah, I mean, ideally you want to do it endoscopically. Okay. Like I said, it's less invasive. That's the way you want to do it. But sometimes you have to go in surgically because if there's so much of a mess, you got to clean it out. Because sometimes your body, even with, so there's two different types of infections. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if we've talked about this on the show before, but there's surgical infections and there's medical infections. So for example, Kel, you have a sinus infection right now. Yep. And so that is a medical infection typically. Okay. Meaning you'll take antibiotics if it's bacterial in origin, which most sinus infections are, you'll take the antibiotics, which fight the bacteria and you'll get better.
Okay.
Now, sometimes if there's like an abscess of some sort, or even if you have a zit,
okay,
you know that on your face, you could take antibiotics and that zit might still be there. Mm-hmm. So it's almost more of a, not quite a surgical, but it's something that needs, you have to get the gunk out.
Right.
Okay. So you have to pop the zit. You have to get all the bad stuff out. You have to completely get it out in order for it to start to heal. Ah. And it's the same philosophy here. Oh. If there's like an intra-abdominal zit, if you will, or an abscess or a collection of purulent or basically pus filled kind of fibrinous exudate type of stuff inside of your abdomen.
Okay.
You need to go in. We have like a long thing, which you guys have seen during the surgeries. That's like a suction irrigator.
Oh,
so
yeah,
it can actually blast fluid in. And then it's like, it looks like a trumpet. On the other one you push, it will suction it out. So you wash, you suck, you wash, you suck, you wash, you suck.
And like
then
the
you can even leave a drain.
With their teeth.
Yeah.
When they clean your teeth.
When you're an assistant, that's your job, is you suck up all the stuff.
Yeah.
There you guys go. I love it when you guys bring it to some real life scenarios and everything.
Well, I used to be a dental assistant. So So I actually went to school and like that was what I did before I got sick. And
she actually passed her boards with my teeth.
Yeah. I took her x-rays. To pass my boards for
why are you two such good friends? You guys are just wild. I love it. I love your story.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And it was a long time ago. I mean, it was before I was married to Satan.
Yep.
So
married and divorced.
Wow. Married and divorced together.
Wow. That was a minute ago. So you know all about teeth and abscesses and infections. And this is what it is. It's an infection, an intra-abdominal infection. You could do very powerful IV antibiotics to try to knock it out. But sometimes if there's a drainable fluid collection, you either need to go in surgically, or there's one other thing is that you can actually enlist the help of your radiology colleagues, because under the guidance of a CT scan, they can shoot an image live and they can direct a needle into the collection and suck it out that way too.
Ooh,
if it's amenable to CT guided drainage by, it's called interventional radiology.
Oh my God.
So they can
so cool.
also do it.
Yeah.
That would be so there's cool. three different types of people that can help you. GI, who are the ones that do the interventional endoscopy. There's, of course, surgery, bariatric surgery would get in there potentially, or even radiology. So there's different ways you can approach it this way, this way, this way, this way, this way, all with the same goal of closing the leak and making sure there's no intra-abdominal contamination.
Wow, so interesting.
Well, that makes me feel more comfortable knowing that there's several different ways that we can do this and knock it out and not have to worry about it.
Definitely.
Like,
what are some symptoms? Because we talked about the patient that you had, she was vomiting up blood. What are some other things that you can kind of watch out for?
Yeah. And that's, and the vomiting blood is a very unusual presentation. So, so if you're out there, people ask me all the time, like, how will I know if I'm having a leak? The first thing is you will know, there's no mistaking it. You will know something is wrong.
Okay.
And it's not just like, do I have to pass gas? Is that gas? No. You're like, something is severely wrong. So the main thing you'll feel is a stabbing pain.
Oh,
okay. I mean, this isn't just like cramps or like a soreness, incisional soreness. This is like, I feel like, and it's going to happen in the left upper quadrant, which we talked about that before, which is the area right under your left breastbone or rib cage on the left side, or even in the upper area here, where it's different from acid reflux or chest pressure or gas pains. It feels like someone's stabbing you.
Okay.
The other big thing is that it doesn't happen typically. The presentation is not right after surgery. So normally it's about a week out is when it starts to come into action.
Okay.
Somewhere between a week to 2 to 3 weeks.
The Band-Aid thing, if it's a week.
you know, exactly. Your body's trying to, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Unless there's like a, just a huge hole, like, mm-hmm. which you would have noticed, mm-hmm. a small leak, and you'd be so surprised, these little pinpoint leaks, pinpoint can wreak so much havoc.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's crazy if that happens. So they're normally very, very small. Okay. They don't happen initially. The other big thing is, if it were to happen initially, would be something called tachycardia, which means your heart rate is beating fast. If your heart rate is over 115, 120 at rest, there's something wrong.
Okay.
It could be as simple as dehydration. Mm-hmm. It could be that, it's not typically that you're deconditioned. It's not like, oh, you know, I'm just overweight. I haven't really worked out in a while. No, your heart rate doesn't race that quickly at rest. Mm. It could be that you're having a pulmonary embolism, which is where you have a blood clot in your lungs, which you have chest pain, you can't breathe from that. So it could be that. Or it could be a leak, or it could even be a bleed. So if your heart rate is high, like the first day of surgery, it's typically that you're bleeding somewhere.
Okay.
So that's what you got to think about. So fast heart rate, I just don't feel well. I'm having stabbing pain. And in the leaks that I've had, patients have told me when there was a more significant leak that I had, the patient told me that it's impending doom. And that's what you'll read about in the textbooks.
Whoa.
That it says, I think I'm going to die.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
Like you feel that way. You're like, I think I'm dying, because your body's going into sepsis, which ultimately could go into septic shock, which you don't want to delay. I mean, there's different classifications of emergencies, and I would call free air, sepsis, septic shock, a class A, let's go to the OR immediately, and let's get this. It's really one of the only real surgical emergencies that we have, where we would rush back to the operating room and try to, you know, again, control the contamination, control the septic, get control of it, drain it, fluid drainage, all that kind of stuff, resuscitation.
Wow.
Boom. And then you try to fix it.
That is a true emergency.
Yes. Like, yes.
That would be an emergency.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. So if that's happening, you call right away, like any of those symptoms, like, and the thing is,
call 911.
Yeah. Like, if you're having that, I'm going to die, call 911. I know some people are like, we'll see if it passes. Like, no, just call. Just call.
Not when you feel like
that. You know, like when some people, there's certain words that they use and you just think, oh gosh, go to the ER right now. Mm. And if they can, like, check your vital signs, what have you. But usually it's like, put me on the phone with EMS. Let me know what's going on. And sometimes it could just be nothing. And if that's the case, I'm thrilled. And so are you. Like,
right?
Let's exhale together. Like, just that's really, okay. If it's like a false alarm and, you know, just listen to your body but you'll know, we all know when something's just not right.
Yeah.
And I think that's important. And we've talked about this before, that it's so imperative when you're picking a bariatric surgery practice, that the communication is there, that you feel like your surgeon, would drop anything and everything, of course. I mean, and I think most of us as American Board of Surgery certified surgeons out there would, I mean, that's why we got into this. It's just to help. I don't think that you have to worry about that in too many places in the United States.
Yeah.
Right. I think that's an old thing. Cause like my dad, like my whole family was very like, they're just out to get me. They just want my money and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, dad, you really think that like they went through all this schooling just to get you? Like, simmer down now.
I mean,
there was some schmucks back in the day that did that crap to people, but like, that's not heard of anymore. You know, that was like 70s and my dad was born in the 50s. Like, I get why he thought some of those like ideals, but it was like, we're in 2020.
Well, and there are some crap offices. I mean, we've heard some stories from people that patients that there's basically like, they're not there. They don't talk to them. Like, they're not giving them information. There are some crappy surgeons out there. There has to be. But I think the thing that we didn't realize is that you can research your surgeon.
Yeah.
You don't have to go to just one person and that's it. And that's what we both thought. That, I mean, gratefully, we both got amazing surgeons. Yeah. But you can pick your place that you want to go to. Mm-hmm. For the most part, you have a choice. And if that's an hour drive or whatever, it's worth it, because this is a lifelong relationship.
Yeah, this is your life.
Yeah,
so.
And you want to be able to formulate a relationship that you can call them or email them and say, hey, this is what's going on. Is this normal? Because you've never gone through it before. but your surgeon has.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
like,
oh gosh, yeah.
Talk to them.
Yeah.
Have a communication and open communication with your office.
I know. It's crazy. Like, I'm like, when did this happen? I've been doing this now for almost a decade as an attending. And then I was in training forever, as you guys know, before that. yeah. And it is like, wow. Like, I think I've seen it all. And then it's like, wow, I've never seen that one before. That is interesting. And, you know, just always like learning and innovating. And the thing about that anatomy is just like just stare at it all the time, all right. the time. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to, on the same kind of note, I wanted to show you guys the bypass as yes, well
please.
Here.
Yes.
So let me go here. I'm going to share my screen again.
Yeah, because we have a lot of people that have bypass.
Well, we just interviewed somebody on Sunday, yesterday, that just recently,
She's only 2.5 months out.
2.5 months, and she had bypass. And Zach, my boyfriend, had bypass as well. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah. So it's super interesting to me because we understand because we're in a different classification.
Yeah, and I would imagine their complications is probably a little bit different than ours, or no?
Yes, there are. Okay. There's some of the same basics. Some things that are a little bit different.
Okay.
So we could talk for, I don't know, what do you guys got, 20, 30, 40 hours about like all the different nuances and complications. So I want to tell you some of the majors, common ones, some of the top ones with these things.
Yeah.
Okay. So the bypass. Now this one is a little bit trickier to understand because there's a fair amount going on here as you have witnessed on our bypass. The sleeve is about 20 minutes. It's like, I joke, I learned how to do it in kindergarten. It's like you put in a pattern, you cut out the pattern, you pull it out, and that's the end of it.
Yes.
The bypass, a lot more things going on. There's the two different connections. There's the bypass stomach. So just to review the anatomy here. So with this one, I take the stomach from the size of a football down to the size of a thumb.
Yes.
So the new stomach is only about 5% of the size that it is now. And I do this over a sizing tube. I do it over a 32 French. And when I make the sleeves, I do it over a 36 French. Mm. So anyway, now it's called a gastric. So gastric's another word for stomach.
Okay.
Bypass. Because 95% of the stomach is still inside of the patient, but it is bypassed. In other words, food won't go through it. That area is bypassed from food sitting and being stored in there. So food goes into the mouth. It goes into the tube in the chest called the esophagus. It goes through the diaphragm hiatus into that thumb-sized pouch, directly down to the small intestine here. This part of the small intestine that's connected from the stomach pouch to the small intestine is called the rulim. After someone's name. And then the 95% that's bypassed is still making stomach or digestive juices that go downstream. And it's called a root in Y because it looks like the letter Y here, which is where the digestive juices mix up with the food.
Okay. Well, it's kind of funny because it looks like an X at the top and then it goes to a Y at the bottom.
Interesting. I never thought of it like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I see it.
That's why I'm like root, like the X and then the Y. Like it just makes sense to me.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. I'm like, interesting. I never thought about it there like that. You guys are so wild. So it's not, I guess so. Okay. I see. So this, I could get into a lot of technical details that you don't care about. I was going to say, this is actually an anticholic, antigastric rulim. And if there's any bariatric surgeons out there watching, oh my gosh, don't roll your eyes. Okay. So there are there's two different connections here where there's an upper connection called the gastrojejunostomy. And then there's a lower connection called the jejunojejunostomy. So again, the upper one is the GJ, the lower one is the JJ.
Okay.
So the issue here is that, yes, you could also leak there. And if you had a JJ leak, I would need to go back in laparoscopically. I'd have to resect the entire JJ and I would reconstruct it surgically. There's no endoscopic way to deal with a JJ leak. It would
JJ's
require surgical.
JJ is the lower
surgical.
One, right?
JJ is the lower one. JJ is the Y.
Okay.
And then the upper, the GJ, you could still try the endoscopic measures as well.
Okay.
So you could do, you know, a number of things there. But the reason why I wanted to bring this up, the bypass, is because there's acute complications or the ones that happen within 30 days. And then there's complications that can happen downstream.
Okay.
Years later. So one that can be the same sort of thing is a marginal ulcer perforation. So you can get ulcers, and you guys may have, there's many, many patients out there who could get ulcers.
Okay.
And what happens is the acid that's made in the stomach pouch is right up against the small intestine, which is not used to so much acid there. Okay. Even though it's a small pouch, it's not used to it.
Okay.
So if you do things that would increase the acid, or if you do things that narrow the blood supply, then you could get an ulceration, which in an extreme case could even pop, perforate, and now you're with a perforation is the same sort of presentation as a leak.
Oof. Okay.
So the long-term marginal ulceration after bypass happens, number one through 1 million reasons, is if a patient is smoking cigarettes.
Oh.
The nicotine is a vasoconstrictor, and it can cut the blood supply to that little tiny pouch that's living off of little tiny arteries at this point. It doesn't have that big, robust stomach.
Okay.
And so if that's narrowed over time, you can get an ulcer because it's just angry there because of the vasoconstriction, the narrowing, and it can result in the ulcer, which could perforate. Now, typically ulcers don't perforate.
Okay.
If you were to get an ulcer, I actually have one on the inside of my mouth right now.
Ouch.
It's just the same. You guys have all had them. You know, when you bite something and then you have an ulcer, it's like exactly like that, but only now it's here. So every time you eat, it's like, oh, it's like, you know, when you're eating, I can at least avoid that area of my mouth while I'm chewing.
Uh-huh.
There you can't avoid it. And so it can be very painful to eat. So the good thing is the ulcers can heal with medical management.
Okay.
Most of the time. Number one, stop the inciting offense. So if you're smoking, stop smoking. If you're, if you are doing excessive anti-inflammatories, like you're eating ibuprofen, or if you're on lots of bi-mouth steroids, is even way higher than even anti-inflammatories, that can cause an issue with messing up with the acid balance as well.
Okay.
So those things can increase your risk of gastritis, irritation, ulceration. So you want to try to stop those if you can.
Okay. And I do. Then, oh, no, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I have a question while I'm thinking about it. Mm-hmm. So in our Benchies group, we had a question about the NSAIDs.
Yes.
In Pepto, because apparently on the back of it, it says that it's it has it in there. So the question was, is it okay?
Yeah.
To take it's okay. Pepto? Okay.
Okay.
And there's a little bit of controversy about this, but there is more up-to-date research that shows that taking anti-inflammatory meds, which again are like Motrin, ibuprofen, Aleve, taking those things after surgery occasionally is fine.
Okay.
That's what I thought. Okay.
Yeah. It's fine. If you have a sleeve, that's fine.
Okay.
I mean, even if you use a fair amount with a sleeve, you're fine. You're fine.
Good.
If you smoke after a sleeve, not ideal, but you're fine.
Okay.
Of course, we as a doctor, I don't want you to smoke, but
stop
you know,
smoking,
it's one of
guys.
Things.
No, it's 2021. Stop smoking.
Stop smoking. This is going to be the big thing here.
Yeah.
Yes.
But as far as smoking after a gastric bypass, it's a different ballgame. Telling you guys, it is. And as far as, you know, how do you treat it then medically? So again, first stop the thing. And then the second thing is you can take proton pump inhibitors, which are like Protonix or Nexium.
Okay,
you would take
those
twice a day. And then you would take something called Carafate, 1 gram, 4 times a day. And you could do the liquid, which can be very expensive, or you can get the tablets, you crush them, you mix them with a little bit of water until it's like a slushy consistency, swallow it, and it will coat the lining and it will heal it.
Oh.
You typically just need about a month's treatment of it.
Okay.
And so you can diagnose it with an endoscope, which is where they go down, they see it, they can biopsy it, they can test for a bacteria called H. pylori, which is something that some patients even have that procedure done before their surgeries. And then you take the medication twice a day, proton pump inhibitors, 4 times a day, the Carafate, 1 gram, of course, check with your doctor and whatever they recommend. And then ultimately you'll have another scope in 4 to 6 weeks just to see if there's complete resolution of the ulcer. And if you still have the ulcer and you're like, I've never smoked, I don't drink excessive amounts of alcohol, I never take anti-inflammatory meds, I just keep getting this ulcer. Sometimes in rare circumstances, despite medical management and not being on those issues, you might actually have to have a revision of your gastrogejunostomy, that GJ connection where you cut it out and then you reconnect it.
Okay.
Oh, okay. So you're basically going through it all over again.
Exactly.
Okay.
So that can happen. The only problem with that is that the stomach pouch sometimes is very short.
Right.
So if you need to resect that, you might not have enough length on the stomach. So you might even have to get like an esophagogastrostomy, which means you're connecting esophagus to the jejunum, which again, I don't want to bore you, but it's not ideal.
We're not bored.
No, nope.
We're not bored. We're very interested in everything.
I'm like, is this boring? I don't know. Is anybody out there still listening? I'm wondering. I'm hoping we get lots of listeners.
The eyes glazed over. No.
Nope.
No. I think that, we're a weird breed and we like to know all the things that happen.
Yeah.
But I think everybody out there also wants to know what's going on in their own body. And
absolutely,
especially pre-op, like you want to know what could happen and what to look out for. So I really appreciate that. So the question that I have is revising from. So you said one of the complications that you can have is acid reflux with the sleeve.
Yes.
And yes. I'm currently experiencing that. Yes, because I had GERD before I had sleeve, but it was controlled with medication. And so there was, and they did an endoscopy. See, I said it right that time.
There you go.
An endoscopy,
and everything was fine. So she was like, yeah, we'll go ahead and do the sleeve. Well, now I'm having lots of GERD pain again. I'm still on the same medication. So that's actually what I'm talking to her about today. Is what to do.
Yeah.
So what do you go, what do you recommend patients to do if they're going through what I'm going through as a complication?
So unfortunately it's not uncommon. Mm-hmm. I'd say about 5% of all the sleeves that I do, I end up having this conversation with after the fact. So that's 1 in 20. That's not small. That's, you know, I've had a lot of patients with this conversation.
Wow.
So what I would do is I would have you go to radiology and do an upper GI swallow study.
Okay.
Where you'll drink the contrast and then live, they're shooting an x-ray and then we're seeing what exactly happens to the contrast.
Okay.
So is it going through easily? Is it sitting there? And sometimes it's going to come right back up and you can really see some significant varying degrees of severity of reflux that happens.
Okay.
You can also identify a hiatal hernia, which again is where your sleeve stomach, which should be below your diaphragm, completely in your abdomen. Sometimes it slides back up.
Oh.
And that's why it's called heartburn, because the stomach, which should be in your abdomen, might come up into your chest and then be sitting right next to the heart.
Oh.
And it can cause some of that acid just to sit there and burn. It can be from it.
Okay.
So if you have, I mean, I don't like to mess around with it. If I see someone who on an upper GI swallow study has pathology or an abnormality related to their sleeve and they're having symptoms like you are with the reflux, I'm pretty aggressive with revising those to a gastric bypass, because patients do so well and they wake up in the recovery room. The way that they swallow their saliva is even a little bit different. It just goes down easier without it kind of sitting there and regurgitating, because again, it's pressurized back up because of that pylorus.
And I didn't realize that was a thing. I just thought that was a sleeve thing, but I get that feeling all the time of like it coming back up a little bit when I'm eating.
I mean, I'm curious, Mel, do you get that feeling?
I didn't know that was a thing. I just thought that was a normal sleeve thing. So good to know.
It's not a normal sleeve thing. It's not an uncommon thing, but it's something that if it's like some patients will describe, you know, they realize like, man, I can't lay flat at all. I can't sleep on my back. I mean, I wake up in the middle of the night choking. I feel like it's coming out of my nose.
Yep.
Like if you have that, to me, when I hear those symptoms, I'm like, you need a revision.
I'm glad I asked, because now I have more to tell my surgeon, because I'm like, I have all of those things. Like I wake up in the middle of the night, I'll be coughing and like, I can feel
it's not like
sleep apnea coughing. Like it's like there's reflux and I get pain like right here.
Yeah, that's it. That's the action zone. That's like your GE junction, which is where the esophagus goes into through the diaphragm hole. It's called the hiatus, into the stomach. And if you constantly have what we call it's called epigastric discomfort pain, that's not normal.
Okay.
So, you know, sometimes even people will present in really extreme cases of this acid reflux with microaspirations, which is where it keeps coming back up. And then, you know, like it can go actually down the wrong pipe into into your lungs there. And you could even, or it could go up and it can cause you to have a chronic cough. So like you're talking about sinus, which it's probably sinus, but if you're like constantly like, I'm getting sick, and it's like, oh, it's like always in my chest. Like it could be actually from acid reflux.
Oh, shit. Dang it.
And then the second thing is the other really severe kind of presentation of really bad acid reflux would be your teeth. Like, have you gotten a new like cavity or anything? Like, because it can erode the enamel if you have a lot of, I mean, you probably could tell me this a lot from when you were back in your dental hygienist days.
Yeah, because the acid is eating away the enamel on your teeth. I actually haven't been to the dentist in a while, so I might need to go.
Do the checks.
Well, you might go and they might see it. And so sometimes it's the dentist that's like, they will write a letter of support. If the insurance company sometimes is like, you know, only one bariatric surgery and you know, she's not morbidly obese. She doesn't need it. It's like, it's not for weight loss.
Yeah.
And I almost always get my revisions approved with insurance, even if they're denied initially. I don't care. I just need to talk to a medical director and explain that this is medically necessary for pathology related to the sleeve. This is not for weight loss, although you'll lose weight.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, not like when you originally had the sleeve, but you'll lose some weight. It's a great bonus. You'll lose some, especially when you get back on track. You're on the diet progression. Mm-hmm. You're more high protein. You're like, okay, I'm refocused on it. Mm-hmm. You'll lose some weight. Great. But it's going to almost instantaneously help with the acid reflux.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
You want to do my revision? No.
I would. Can I?
I mean, love for you to do my revision.
That would be amazing.
You know, I have a medical destination site. Actually, I've done patients so far from Arizona, Maryland, and Massachusetts that traveled to Florida to have their surgery. I have a whole clinical destination pathway where you'll stay in town for a few days. I can hook you up.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
That would be actually pretty interesting to have you actually do my revision.
Yeah,
we should. I mean, just saying, we can talk offline about this. It's all virtual care. Just a little shameless plug for me. EventHealthWeightLoss.com. And everything before surgery and after surgery is virtual, even if you live across the street. And we've had tremendous results since March of 2020 with that. And
I love it. I love that.
Yeah, I could care for you. I could care for you.
That's amazing.
So everybody out there, go visit it. If you're pre-op and you're still thinking about who you want to do your surgery, if you're not set on your office, just give a little Google search to Advent Health and figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you and Dr. Bello are just amazing. So
thank you. Yeah. He's awesome too. We're both accepting new patients. So
awesome.
There you go.
Good. Yeah. Come on over. Fly over.
Yeah. Fly over and have a little vacay while you get your stomach taken out.
There you go. We could do come visit me. We already coming to visit me. We can make it a very productive trip.
There you go.
Go there, visit. Come home with a revised stomach.
Yep. One and done.
There we go. That would be so fun. That sounds awesome.
So that fixes everything on the EJ. Is that what it's called?
The GJ. If you have an ulcer there and that sort of thing. Yeah.
Okay. And is all those the same symptoms as like you would get with a sleeve, like for complications, what you would feel like?
Oh yeah. And usually if it's a marginal ulceration perforation, this bad boy is a big hole. Okay. So it's very, very easy to diagnose. The presentation is like, they're sick quick. You go, you take care of it. It's super gratifying because they wake up and they can like go home right afterwards. Cause you just sew it up. And then you, and because it's fresh, it's not like a tiny hole that's kind of had plastered omentum to it. Mm-hmm. It's like a big hole. Whoa, it presented acutely. Now that I'm here in Orlando, this is actually a really hot vacation spot. So we end up operating on people who are here like with their families at Disney, and then they you know, they happen to perforate and then they end up in our ER and they just happen to end up with us, which is kind of like, that's, I hope, crazy. Good news for them. They feel that way. And there's been some patients, it's like we've gone into the OR and they just don't know, like, oh wow, like this little angel came in and fixed this, and they're none the wiser of like who we were and why we were there, and you know, the whole thing behind the scenes.
Crazy.
I always feel like
that's so fun.
Oh,
that
my
is
goodness.
So fun. Oh my God.
Complications are
starstruck. Yeah. Well, I'd be like starstruck, like, oh my God, Dr. D is doing my revision.
Oh my gosh.
Like, I'm in pain, but it's Dr. D, so we're fine.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Can you imagine? You guys would be like, oh, this is just so perfect, but I mean, maybe people will start following me more and I can be more an influencer. I mean, I'm kind of stuck around 10,000 followers. It's so sad.
You'll get more. And yeah, 10,000 is amazing, girlfriend. Stop it.
Even though I'm trying to keep up with you two.
Freaking took our links to gave it to everybody.
They did.
Stupid Instagram.
Oh, I was wondering about that. Yeah. So we don't have anything special for the 10K anymore?
Okay, so the only other thing I've noticed that after you're over 10K, you can create a label for the sticker or the link.
Oh.
So like you can custom name it. Versus if you just have the link, like you can't name it. Like it just pops up as like,
okay.
Yeah.
Oh, you're going to have to show me how to do that too.
Yeah.
So she's going to have to show me because I was like, what is that?
Oh, yeah. I figured that out real easy. I was like, what is this?
That's
because
hilarious.
I don't have it on mine. So what is this? And so that's the only thing I've noticed.
So question about the JJ part. So with the JJ is like, so you said you actually have to go in for the JJ. Now, is it again, same thing, same feelings? Like, you know, how would you know about that?
Okay, so the JJ leaked is exactly the same. And it might be a little bit lower down pain, but it's still like stabbing, impending doom. I don't feel well. And we would, if there's any doubt, you could just do an abdominal x-ray or you would get a CAT scan usually with bi-mouth PO contrast and IV contrast. Mm-hmm. And then you'd be able to see if there's free air, if there's a collection, if there's inflammation, if the bowel wall is thickened. Mm-hmm. It's very easy. There's very classic signs on a CAT scan.
Okay.
Perfect. Yeah. All right. Well, is there any other complication things that we should know about before we
I almost feel
wrap
like we need to do... We need to do part 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, because I got about like, okay, so it's just a run down. We need to talk about small bowel obstructions, which are internal hernias and how to fix those. We'll need to talk about gastric strictures, gastric outlet obstructions, gastric fistulas.
Okay.
I mean, I could keep going.
All
There's
and
a
like
couple
all
things.
Of the things with vitamins too, like the beriberi and things like that. Like
yes, the vitamin B1 deficiency. Yes,
which we talked to somebody that went through it.
Yep.
And so we got the full story from her. But I would like to get your kind of
your take.
Yeah. Your eyes on it.
Well, then definitely we'll do parts of all the parts.
Yes. And if you're listening, watching, you know where to find your girls on Instagram.
That's right.
They should write to you, DM you. We should have like a whole thing, like what questions you have, what follow-up do you want to talk about? Do you have a complication where you have like a stricture or a narrowing at the jejunal area where you're always vomiting? Like I can talk about all kinds of things. So if you've got a complication, we can keep this going. If it's popular and people want more, I got more.
That's right. And awesome. If you're on YouTube, we put in the comments area, write your questions out. Mm-hmm. We'll have all the descriptions there, how to get a hold of Dr. D, how to get a hold of Avon Health. So definitely go there. It's just Our Sleep Life Podcast on YouTube. Just hit subscribe, ring the bell, because that goes a lot of way. We can actually reach more patients by you guys actually subscribing to us. So
and you can also
keep that going.
On our website, and there is a little box where you can ask questions.
Yep.
You can put your email in, and then when we have big things happening, we can email you, let you know. And then also, I was thinking for a part two, we could go over the duodenal switch and the complications with that.
Okay. I don't perform that one.
I know you don't.
But I can talk through it a little bit.
Okay.
Cool.
Because I don't want to leave those switched patients out of there.
That's right.
So I want to cover that also. But yeah, so much more to come, apparently. I didn't realize there was so much to talk about versus like with complications.
Right? I mean, I can't wait to do more. So thank you so much for being on with us, getting back in the game with us.
Yay.
So much fun.
Absolutely.
Everything's kind of slowing down a little bit. So now we can all hang out and chat. So
let's do it.
So much more
to come from us. Yes. All right. Stay tuned, guys. It's been a pleasure as always.
All right. Thank you guys for listening. And we will see you
next time.
Bye. Hey, listeners, if you've enjoyed your time with us, please rate, review, and subscribe on any platform that you get your podcasts. Also, check us out on patreon.com/OSLP for exclusive content with your favorite girls ever.
Yeah.
And also, check out our YouTube page. Subscribe, hit that little bell so you get notified when our new videos drop a week after they are released.
Yeah, and we would like to give a big thank you to Anne-Marie Cruz for our logos, Eric Vaughn with 17th Street Studios because he provides our music and our recording space. Thanks for listening to Our Sleep Live Podcast, where we are breaking that stigma one episode at a time.